On Being is supported in part by Penguin Press, the publishers of Becoming Wise, An Inquiry into the Mystery and Art of Living. Brené Brown praises Krista Tippett's new book as brilliant thinking, beautiful storytelling, and practical insight. You won't forget what you read here. On sale April 5th, wherever books are sold.
I'm Krista Tippett, and this is On Being's Unheard Cuts. You're listening to my unedited conversation with Craig Minowa and Cloud Cult. Download the MP3 of our produced show with them at onbeing.org.
Hello. Everybody hear me? Welcome to On Being. As is customary, how many people have been to our space before? Okay, very few. Awesome. How many people are aware of On Being? Oh, okay, that's much more representative. Well, welcome to all the old loyalists and welcome to the newbies. On Being, if you're not familiar, is a public radio program, and we split off about 2.5 years ago from our parent company, Minnesota Public Radio and American Public Media, because we wanted to do more than just radio. And one of the things we wanted to do was convene events like this. And we can do it in this beautiful space right in downtown Minneapolis. So thank you for coming. And another important part of this is that we connect people to each other. So it's doing the events like this. It's music performances and conversations. But we hope that you will talk to each other and that there will be new ways of connecting and inviting meaning into your lives. So if you can introduce yourselves to each other, whether it's after this or before this, I will say that I'm the executive editor of the show, and that's been the greatest gift I could have had. I've been working with the show about 12 years, and I meet more beautiful people through the nature of the show, the website, and through events like this. As a matter of fact, we have two guests that came from a long ways away. We have David Reese, who's a teacher in Oberlin, Ohio, that's been using our stuff in his classes for Global Perspectives, right? And yes. And he's showing us new ways that we didn't even imagine our content could take shape. And then we have Casper Turkile. Am I pronouncing that right?
Very good, yeah.
Thank you. He's British, so forgive him. But he's at he's right now studying at Harvard, and he's doing this interesting study that how we met was through how we gather, which is he's focusing on millennials and where do they find meaning and ritual and personal transformation, social transformation. And it's not in your traditional churches, and it is. It's at places like CrossFit, SoulCycle, and we hope other places that are resonating, like On Being. So with that, I'll do a little bit of housekeeping. The nature of the show is going to be Cloud Cult's going to come out for 2 or 3 songs, and then Krista's going to sit down with Craig and talk for about 60 minutes, and then Cloud Cult will come back and they'll play a few more songs after that. There is a big request, as you probably all know. Has everybody silenced their ringers on their phones? Everybody turn those off? If you check, I will do that for myself even. It's always the worst perpetrator. You're allowed to take pictures, to tweet. Our Twitter handle is @onbeing, and I believe Cloud Cult's is @cloudcult, right? No spaces, nothing, yeah. This is we're recording this for a national broadcast. And we are a large podcast, so we're not sure when we're going to produce this for air. But if you sign up for our newsletter at onbeing.org, that's the best way to find out when this is going to air. And we always release the unedited interview with our produced shows as well, so bonus. There's also a merchandise table at the back, and I got to meet Kelvin, the guy waving back there. They have all of Cloud Cult's discography. They have some kicking t-shirts and a beautiful sign poster. So after the show, if you want to go back, the merchandise is at the back table on the way out. And with that in mind, just to let you know that we'll try to, I know people are going to want to stand around and talk. There's some beautiful places down the alleyway. Has anybody been to Four Bells yet? They have an awesome bar with beautiful mixed drinks and a great fried chicken. And then there's also a third bird. Yes, I do know that well. So you're welcome to mosey down that way as well after the show. So thank you for coming, and now I'll introduce Cloud Cult.
Hi. Thanks for being here.
I don't know why we're here, and I don't know how, but I'm here with you now. I am here with you now, 'cause you were born to make this right, 'cause you were born to change this life, 'cause you were born to chase the light, 'cause you were born. Kid, there's something that I'd like to show you. Get your things, it's time for us to go. So I grab my backpack, my flashlight, and a bag of caramel corn. I got my bicycle and the radio, and I headed on the road. I said I'm ready for what I'm about to see. Yep. Thank you. snow. Through rusty towns and dusty gravel road. And I said, Grandpa, where is this thing you wanted to show me? He said, kid, you got a long way to go. So I went through canyons, caves, and catacombs. I sailed on bicycle boats. I slept in chapels and brothels. I met the nicest folks. I said, I'm ready for what I'm about to see. Yep. I heard Grandpa, my transistor radio. He said, kid, it's time for me to go. And I know that there was something that I wanted to show you, but it's time for you to find it on your own. Let me tell you about rage when the signal died that day. There's nothing out there, and I don't care if they take my life away. I'm not ready, and I don't want to see. Years since I've heard on my transistor radio, yet I keep going to where it seems I'm meant to go. And I finally realize what he wanted to show me. Where I've been and where I am is the show. Where I've been and where I am is the show.
Okay. So you've been the soundtrack for my life for weeks now.
Aww.
Yeah? I'm taking you to the gym. You've been in the car with me. You've been here at work. I invited my yoga teacher who's played you during our yoga class. And now here you are in my space, and it's just so beautiful.
Aww, thanks, Krista.
Yeah.
It's an honor to be here.
Well, so I'm glad you didn't wear shoes. I was going to say, I read in my preparation that you like to play without shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to know this is a shoe optional workplace.
I appreciate
and
that.
And so you fit right in. Anyone else can take off their shoes as well. I'm wearing shoes tonight because we have company. But would you just introduce everybody? So they're now sitting on one of these sofas, which, I don't know, you can't imagine. We actually work here by day, and we moved all the desks out. They're downstairs. But we do have the sofas out, and so I'm so happy you guys can sit on our comfy sofa. Do you want to just introduce everybody?
Yeah, over here, closest to us is Sean Neary, and he plays they all play so many instruments, but he plays banjo and trombone and glockenspiel and bass and sings. And next to him is Sarah Purbix, and she plays keyboard and French horn and trumpet. And next to her, we have Jeremy Harvey. He is our drummer and also glockenspiel player. And Daniel Zamzow is over there. He plays cello and and the dobro. And Shannon Fried Rubin is over there. She plays violin. And then the love of my life, my wife, Connie Minua, is over there. She paints live on stage for our shows and sings.
Okay. Welcome. My band is here tonight, too. I can't see them all, but I'm just going to, all of our producers, and I actually wrote everybody's name down so I didn't forget anybody because I didn't see them. Lily Percy and Chris Hegel, who you worked with, and Trent Gillis, Mariah Helgeson, Annie Parsons, Marie Sambale, Maya Terrell, Asil Zahran, Bethany Klecker, our newest team member, Selena Carlson, our great intern, Tess Montgomery, and Mari Jensen is assisting with house engineering, and everybody is here tonight because they want to be.
Oh, so. Fantastic.
So you grew up in Owatonna, which is famous for a beautiful bank, right?
That's true.
An architecturally exquisite bank.
That's true.
Is that something that one appreciates as a child growing up in Owatonna?
I don't think so. Actually, I think the thing that really resonated more was there's a place called Mineral Springs, and there's a myth there that the water that comes out of those rocks is magical water from the native people that lived there before. Cite this as a fountain of youth and a fountain of magic, and that's where the youth gathered.
That's cool. And was there, how would you talk about the religious or spiritual background of your childhood?
I was raised in a very devoutly practicing Lutheran family. It was the kind of practicing that was, you know, every service and vacation Bible school and volunteering for the church. So, you know, you're going in early, you're volunteering for Sunday school and making meals if it's the Easter brunch. And my parents were very involved with the church, serving on the board, and it was our community. You know, those were our closest friends growing up, and that practice was ingrained in me very deeply and beautifully. And in different ways. With my dad, it was that this is what we do. This is what we're supposed to do. And with my mom, it felt like she was passionately in love with her belief system and the kind of thing of where, you know, it's Easter morning for whatever reason. Daylight savings time is happening at the time, so you got to wake up really, really early. And as kids, we kind of realized, like, okay, we're going to have to go to the early service at 6 and then volunteer to work at the breakfast and then do the Sunday school and then the late service and get up an hour early to do that. But my mom was the real deal. Like, she would wake up, you know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and we would hear, "Wake up, kids. Today is the day the Lord has risen." And she's so joyful about it.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, it was beautiful to be, and the same kind of thing, like on Good Friday, that she wept openly in church.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I also read somewhere that your mother said of you, Craig was early on interested in the stars. And yeah. I think there's some star imagery in, I would say, your adult spirituality that's evolved.
Yeah, it's kind of stuck around as far as lyrically I'm very entranced by the big mighty universe out there, and yeah, when I was really young, I was kind of an astronomy geek. You know, my friends were into football and trading football cards, and I was into memorizing the diameter of the planets and doing extra credit reports. And I used to sign my name, Craig, future astronomer.
Did you really?
Yeah. In some ways, yeah, it stuck around through the music.
What was the thing that happened today? Did anybody, so two black holes collided, and part of Einstein's theory that had never been proven is now proven, and it's something about, what is it?
Gravitational waves.
Oh. They saw them for the first time.
Really?
Yeah, today.
Wow, we were so busy today, we didn't get to see it.
Yeah.
There's so much happening. There's so much discovery in the world of physics right now that is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. So you were not born with the name in Minowa. Mm-hmm. What was the name you were born with?
Richardson.
Okay.
So that's part of my middle name now, and Connie's last name was Staska. And when we got married, we wanted to... So Latin American tradition of preserving both sides of the family. So you kind of scoot your last name into your middle name, and that way you sort of, you have the paternal and maternal side of the family is still in your name. So we scooted those together and chose the name Minowa for ourselves.
What does this name mean to you?
It's Anishinaabe, and it means moving voice. And change, and for us, we have always had a very, even though we don't know, you know, as far as our lineage goes, we've always had a very strong connection to Native American religions and Native American communities in general, not only spiritually but through environmental work that Connie has done. It being such a huge part of our lives and a huge resonance within us, was sort of bringing that on.
Mm-hmm.
And to
what did it mean? Sorry, did you say that? What is the word?
Moving voice.
Moon.
Moving voice.
Moving voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like we come from this land. We walk this land where all of those ancestors of different lineages walked, but their energy is still here in a space where there is no time and all time is happening at once. We can feel them regularly being here with us and empowering us through the music and through our life choices and everything. And it's been a huge, huge thing this year too. Actually, we have 30 acres out in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I go back into the woods back there to do the lyric writing and just kind of sit and wait and try and let things distill. And there's a spot that I've always gone to that is kind of my safe spot. You know, I'm out away from the world and I can sit there and meditate and just wait for things to come. And over this last year, we've had a couple of experts come out that have looked at that spot. There's these mounds right there, and it's looking like those might be burial mounds. Mm. An old big old witness tree that's bent right by it. But just the feeling of sitting there now and So many times of sitting there, of looking for insight from those old spirits that are still here, and to recognize that, whoa, this is really a special spot.
Yeah.
But that ties back into this long, long tradition of appreciation towards those native religions.
Mm-hmm. Some people, I think people have trouble classifying cloud cult, both the group and the music, and I don't know, I thought this phrase got maybe as close as I would get to saying orchestral rock collective. I mean, what do you call it? Do you have a term, or does that not matter to you?
Yeah, it's tough because the songs vary a lot. There's a lot of intention in making sure that the albums flip through genres. You know, it's a lot like tuning into the radio. A DJ is not going to just sit on one really specific genre. They're going to mix it up, and that keeps the listener entertained. So from the get-go, there was intention of approaching albums on that level of, okay, I just felt that, and I heard this instrumentation. Now I want to feel something different and have a slightly different instrumentation and keep that mix going enough so that now that we're in this digital age of flipping through the iPod and just picking out the singles, that hopefully people would stay with the album as a whole. But orchestral indie rock, experimental, I don't know, bananas.
Yeah. And you're so beloved by your fans and celebrated at this point. But like every overnight sensation, you had a decade or two kind of in the shadows, right? It's interesting how we tell the story of the great success. And I mean, I saw you when I was getting ready to interview you. You were on stage being interviewed in Colorado, and I guess you were part of a great festival center stage, but you were talking about how you'd first been there busking on the streets and just making money to kind of spend the night somewhere and keep eating.
Yeah, it's been a very long road. I feel like it's such a competitive field that you have to inherently just love it in order to survive. And so you put up with the long years of nobody really paying attention, and you just keep doing it because of that inherent love. And you know, those first few albums, there really wasn't ever a thought that it was going to go anywhere, and wasn't actually even a goal, because the stage is an area that I've historically not felt comfortable. I really like to compose and write and be in that sacred space, but I'm not a limelight lover. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but it comes with the territory. So I'm thankful for the ritual of performance and the ceremony that we can do when that is happening. But, for the longest time, it was really just doing it for the love of it and quite obsessively.
I think Mark Wheat is a friend of mine, and I think a friend of yours, and I know he's a friend of your work, and he wished he could have been here tonight, but he's on air. He wrote the foreword to this biography, mm-hmm. Chasing the Light, and he writes about hearing Who Killed Puck, your album, in 2001, and he wrote, "I remember thinking it was brilliant and beautiful, but it had no chance of being a success. Minna was seemed so open and vulnerable that I thought the business would eat him up and spit him out in no time."
It was very close. It's been very close to that many times. it's a very tough business. And, you know, we started our own record label in order to be able to practice all of the ethics that we feel. I went to school for environmental science because I wanted to do something good for the planet and leave it being in a better spot than if I hadn't been here. Yeah. And so when the first album was finished, Who Killed Puck, there was the realization of now we're starting a business. You know, we need to manufacture these, and all these sort of ethical platitudes that I had before, as far as like down with this business and down with this business, I was stepping into the business shoes, and I realized like I have to, for the love of ethics, I have to practice everything that I feel hold to be true and honest and right. And there wasn't any companies out there replicating CDs in ways that felt like it would be the right thing to do. And so we just kind of had to start from scratch and develop our own way of making CDs. And
also living on the land.
Living on the land at the same time. And yeah, and figuring out how to ship them too. Initially, like we shipped them, we would gather dried leaves from the land out back, and we'd pack it in that. And I felt like, oh, this is going to be, you know, it's not only like the most environmentally friendly, but it just feels so sacred to send off our babies in these leaves. And boy, got some vicious letters back from people in the music business. So just, I opened the box and a bunch of dirt fell out. I don't even want to listen to it. But we kept going and kept doing what we needed to do, and we still are. I think it tempers our growth overall, but that's okay. Mm.
So in 2002, in February, a year after that, Who Killed the Puck album, your son Caden didn't wake up one morning. And it seems like, you know, you poured your grief into music, but I don't know if that's how you would say it. There was definitely an incredible connection you made between grief and music. I mean, how would you start to talk about that connection?
Yeah, I really just didn't want to go out into the world at all. We had a little farm out in Hinckley, and all I wanted to do was go down in the basement and play recordings of him and play music at the same time. And if I did that, if I did that long enough, I would feel like I was with him again. And that was the only way that I could feel like I was with him again. And so I did that pretty obsessively for a very long time. And there wasn't any intention of creating a project out of it. It was just personal medicine. And
you used that phrase, music as medicine. Had you thought of music as medicine before that?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
It's always, it's saved me so many times. And I think it's such an important thing to push to our youth who have, you know, hormones flying through, and then they need things like that. But yeah, no, it's always felt like that, something very, very spiritual and sacred. If you look at the history of music, for the vast majority of time, people have used music as medicine or as a connection to the divine, and just as a very, very sacred tool. And I think sometimes when I talk about like pop music and that, I can come across as sounding like a Scrooge or something, like you have to do it sacred, otherwise it's, but I think there's a place for the really light stuff, and there's a place for the highly intentioned stuff, and I've been always very attracted to the highly intentioned. And so at that time, I needed that highly intentioned connection to the divine and personal medicine aspect of music more than anything. And so it was very obsessive. There'd be weeks that I wouldn't have to leave the house. I was fortunate to have a day job at the time that I worked remotely as an environmental scientist for the Organic Consumers Association. And so I wouldn't have to go anywhere at all.
Well, you recorded like over 100 songs, right?
Over the course of a year, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they have some of them have the sound of Caden's voice in them. Mm. And they, I'd say they have you grieving in them, right? Mm-hmm. Or crying and mm-hmm. talking, and it's incredibly raw. Mm-hmm. It's really painful to listen to. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what it was like to make that music.
It all was very, I approached it on a very authentic snapshot kind of level. Like I am a true believer in the energy and intention that is being put into a song at the same time as it's being recorded or performed. And so a completely polished performance in a studio that didn't have the gut-wrenching feeling behind it has a lot of insignificance to me in comparison to something that might be rougher, but has that the energy of intention and authenticity in it. And so those first few albums I really approached as, this is a snapshot in the studio, this is what I'm feeling right now, and I could relay this track and sing it so much prettier, but I know what I was feeling at that point in time, and that's the keeper track. But again, I mean, there wasn't ever an intention that with that. It was friends that came to me and said, "There, you have some songs here that you could put together."
Really?
And
so
put
it
out.
Was kind of after the fact that there was the idea to turn it into an album.
Right. Well, I mean, there was the Who Killed Puck before that, and there was nobody, you know, gave that a nod. So I think there's always like a part of the self that's like, well, I'm creating this to finish an album, but it's a small thing. It's more like you have to give yourself a legitimate excuse for the ridiculous number of hours that you're putting into something. Like,
yeah. But, yeah.
But no, it really came down to friends pushing me to put it out there. And so that's
Do you listen to those songs now?
I very, very rarely.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think it would be hard for any of us to have that kind of record. Mm-hmm. I don't know what an equivalent would be in music or some equivalent of that kind of dark place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't tell you the last time I listened to it. And for the most part, the songs from those earlier albums are not an option for set lists now.
Yeah.
You know, we did them during sets for years, and they were a way on stage to connect with Caden too, that I felt like as soon as we were up there and you were playing and you could get into that spot through the music, that I could feel his soul join me on stage by the end of the set. And I felt for years that if I left the stage and I hadn't gotten that deep enough to feel his presence by the end of the set, that I didn't do my job that night. I still feel that, but in ways of where it's more not exclusive. Like Cedar Falls last week, I felt my grandma there with me, and then we have a story shared from fans and supporters of people that they've lost. And
yeah,
I feel like the whole ceremony is an opportunity to raise the ghosts and mix them around in a celebration.
It's pretty astonishing to read what people write from hearing the songs, that people respond with completely directly and intimately to your loss, because it turns out that loss, that everybody has has loss. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I you've read, you know, they've lost in all kinds of ways, all kinds of people, relationships. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was one I wrote down, somebody who wrote, "I came across this band shortly after I tried to kill myself, and the song, 'Thank You,' reached into my soul and planted a seed of hope, a hope that life could be beautiful. That song was the first turning point of healing for me. And since then, Cloud Cult's music has continued to change and heal me." And there are like thousands of variations on that theme. I wonder, was that a discovery for you too? I mean, out of your loss, to look up and see that everywhere in the world. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. Early on, it was a personal medicine, but then people started coming to shows that had similar loss of, initially it was people that had lost children as well, and that they found comfort in that music. And as time went on, you know, then there's more people that were coming with different reasons, you know, struggling with addiction or depression, things like that. And then that's where I realized that, you know, flashback to when I was in college and trying to decide what I was going to do for a major. And I remember being in the woods and feeling like I need to decide between music composition and environmental science, and sitting out there meditating and waiting, and ultimately feeling I want to leave this place better. Music feels kind of too selfie, and I could do good with the environmental science. So at this point now, flashing ahead, where people are finding something good in it, and I feel like I could do good with this. I could continue to do this, and that's where things started to shift. But it's also very important at that time to realize like that I needed to continue the authenticity and continue the humility, and understand that when people are coming with those stories of struggles that they've overcome, and sharing it in a way where they are honoring the band and the music, I recognize wholeheartedly that has very little to do with us, and that we're a reflection. There's something in this that they're able to see deeper parts of themselves, and all of that energy and power of healing and overcoming and hope is coming out of them. And
yeah, you get to let it in, right? But you get to let it go through,
right?
You as
exactly.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, the biggest destroyer of good art is ego, and ego runs rampant in this industry, and for good reason. Get to be in the limelight, yeah. And if you enjoy that, then that can then blow up your head, and then suddenly you lose track of what you're doing in the first place. So I'm lucky to be super self-conscious and
yeah. And yep. Maybe I don't know. You and Connie have been through a lot, obviously, and I don't know either one of you, but she probably keeps you honest too.
She's really good at that. She's the best team member.
So, you know, I was thinking, and you have two other children, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised when I was reading your story and listening to the music, and you know, you have, again, you hear Caden's voice, and I've seen pictures of him. You have films of him that come out in films about the band, and 2 years old, right? A two-year-old is such an amazing, you know, still so tiny, and but so incredible. Mm. And I was thinking about one of the earliest shows we did, like, oh my gosh, literally before it was way before On Being. I mean, it was when I was doing pilots. It was called Children and God.
Mm.
And I interviewed Robert Coles, who wrote The Spiritual Life of Children, a psychiatrist, and also this woman named Diane Comp, who was a pediatrician, and she actually worked with dying children.
Mm.
But I heard in that time, and also I had young children at that time, there's this Hebrew proverb, and I think there's actually an Islamic version of this too, that before a child is born, the angel Gabriel tells them everything, all the secrets of the universe, and then kisses them on the forehead, and they are born, and they begin to forget.
Hmm.
I think I had this feeling, and I don't know, I saw it in these pictures of Caden, right? And you had this feeling with children, like they do know things, like they're closer to God or whatever God is.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of embody that mystery, and you just wish they had the words to tell you the secrets they know, and you also see them growing and becoming more like us. And but then also the fact that that's all of us, right? Like we all, the child in each of us. And so that's all part of our story. And you talk a lot about moving through that loss and through that grief as kind of a rebirth. This doesn't really sound like a question. I just want to tell
you
all that, right?
What? I'm just engaged. Oh, wonderful, Krista.
Does that make sense to you? I mean, I don't.
Yeah, it makes beautiful sense. I totally agree. And With Caden and with our kids now, we're asking what they're dreaming. You just know that they're connecting in a way that censorship hasn't stepped in yet, and yes, all that modeling hasn't stepped in yet. And actually, the new album that we're just releasing is really about that adult reclaiming that child inside that can believe in magic and connect to things in a way that it doesn't have all the cynicism that we all end up...
And knows things, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah. Caden had a look in his eyes of that he knew. Well, every parent knows. They look at their 1-year-old, 2-year-old, 6-year-old, whatever, and know that, oh, you know way more than I understand you know.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. I was so happy you started with the song "You Were Born Tonight," and I love that so much. When did you write that?
That was for Novar. After Caden had passed, Connie and I went through grieving for a few years, and then spent time rebuilding our relationship and trying to get to a point that we felt like we could have the strength to have a child again. And we were lucky to be able to do that. And before Nova was born, we finished the Light Chasers album, and that was a song written specifically for him.
Mm-hmm. For Nova?
Mm-hmm.
Before he was born.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. That's that Einsteinian view of time looping around. And
mm-hmm. That looping of time or lack of time is all over the place in there. And in fact, there's a whole lot of intention on not getting too caught into the illusion of time. And I think the presence of Caden is only possible with that recognition that time doesn't actually exist on a level of quantum mechanics. Hence, when this illusion of the physical universe dissipates, or we fold back into dark energy or whatever the case is, I know that all those moments that we had with him, they are forever. And this moment with you right now is forever. Every moment is forever. And that intention on timelessness at this point in time is huge in our lives.
You know, Einstein said that our perception of time as an arrow moving forward, past, present, future, is a stubbornly persistent illusion. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're referring mm-hmm. to that quote.
It's exactly.
Such, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We blend a lot of quantum physics into our philosophies and in our music, and I am an absolute lover of the fact of, or the idea of timelessness and formlessness.
Mm-hmm. I think somewhere you said that in that depth of grief, you, what'd you say, you lost, you gave up on, after Caitlin died, you gave up on God and turned to science and discovered magic.
There's so much to be said about a belief system and what kind of reality that sculpts for a person. I like I said earlier, it was raised in that Lutheran church, but it was when I was 16 and I bought my first car. It was Easter Sunday and I had worked the night before till close. And it would be absolutely out of order in my family to not go to church on Easter Sunday. But I had been up late working the night before. I was supposed to meet my family there. And I drove the car, and instead of turning to go to church, I turned and went to the woods. It's a big public woods that was there in Owatonna. And I sat out there, beautiful spring morning, everything coming to life, and had a religious experience that I hadn't ever felt within those four walls of the church. and magic was reborn in me, and I, you know, it wasn't any shutting any doors or setting anything apart. I mean, Jesus spent his time praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, and there's something to be said about stepping out into the wilderness and just letting those constructs of the mind disappear and reawakening to the fact that it is an incredibly complicated, mysterious, and beautiful universe. And I can't put my finger on it, I can't name it, I can't classify it, I can't put it in a box. So right now I'm just going to lay back and be in awe. And maybe that's something that we all need to practice a lot more, which is the child in us.
Yeah. I do want to say, though, you know, your mother on Easter Sunday, that, you know, insistence every year at mm-hmm. Easter that Christ is risen today, mm-hmm. is that same, mm-hmm. is that same, it expresses what quantum physics tells us now in such an interesting way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The physical aspect of the universe that we can somewhat classify is 2%. The other 98%, well, we don't know. But all the physical form manifests out of that. How much does belief and dream have power over manifesting that energy into form and creating our reality?
Let's see. Oh, I want to do my radio thing. I'm Krista Tippett, and this is On Being. Today, I'm with Craig Minowa and the band Cloud Cult at the On Being Studios on Loring Park in Minneapolis. So let's talk about some of your lyrics, which are so beautiful.
Thank you.
You're a poet. Actually, this follows on what you were just saying. So in Breakfast with My Shadow, which is another, there's really so many wonderful songs, in your repertoire.
Thank you.
But Breakfast with My Shadow is one I really like. But I'm just saying, if I started going on, I'd have to list 35 that I really like. Mm. So here are two questions. Can you fall in love with the things you only know, the things you may never touch? Another question, if I truly believe that things can change, will I wake up to something different? I just want to know where you came out on those questions.
Thanks.
But also, would you explain? I think I get this, but I'd like to know how you explain. Can you fall in love with the things you only know, the things you may never touch? What's that about?
I think that is so much about so much of our reality. As a band, our one of our recurring themes is that philosophical search for the divine and the connection to God, however you want to define that, and that true source out there. And it's something that we're never going to be able to wrap our heads around, and we'll keep trying to get as close to that as possible. And it's something that you really never do truly touch. And get down to the physics on that of where there actually really never is.
Yeah.
The actual touch. And so the whole thing is abstract. But I'm madly in love with it. And I want to live my life that way.
Yeah. And what about... if I truly believe that things can change, will I wake up to something different?
I think that would go back to that same thing of manifesting the dream, create your own reality kind of situation. There's so much to be said about the mantra and intention and practicing things over and over in your head as far as how you want your reality to be sculpted, and it takes a lot of practice to to do all of that. Presence, presence, presence. I'm here, I'm here. Where are you? Oh, I was thinking about the past. No, I'm here. No, I'm worried about the future. No, I'm here. You know, you have to keep on doing it, and you have to keep on believing in the bigger things too. We're all told through the media to have this cynicism or to think that we understand the universe more than we do, and it takes a lot of strength to step out of that and say, I want to believe in something bigger, and I want to have guts to have faith in that without having to argue with anybody about what that is.
Yeah, and I feel like hope is and a rejection of cynicism is a huge theme that runs through your music, through Cloud Cult, and it's not just in the lyrics. I think it's right. It's a presence, and it's a spirit that and the feeling, the joy. It's a hopefulness that kind of comes through the music, that transmits through the music. It occurred to me that, you know, light chasing for you is a synonym for hope.
That's true. Yeah, the Light Chasers album was a figurative and literal journey. The whole story was about a crew that decides to take off and out into space and look for God, look for the light at the end of the tunnel, like physically go after it and look until they find it. And in the end, all hope is gone, the fuel is gone, everything is spent, and there's nothing there. And it's not until that moment of surrender and apology, laying down all the layers of the protective layers of the self, this ultimate moment of fragility where love is able to come outside of the skin, and then for that moment there's that connection and they see the light and they recognize, oh, was it always there, and did we have to travel through the universe to do it? And so there is that hope, you know, of that, those brief moments that we get to be in touch with that sort of power. You know, it's brief, but how can we practice to make that more prominent in our lives? How can we practice to make that more prominent as a culture and as a global family? And one of the interesting things about that whole journey out into space to find that light is that space is curved, as you know, and so the universe, instead of being a plane, can blow up like a balloon. And since there is no time on the energy level, you remove the facet of time. If you could look as far out as you possibly could to the end of the universe, quote unquote end of the universe, you'd be looking over that entire curve, and if you remove time and you could see far enough, the farthest that you can possibly see would be the back of your head. So you can search as far as you want to search, and you can journey as far as you want to journey, and you'll ultimately end up right here, right now. And that gives me hope.
Yeah. I also think we live in this bizarre moment where we're inundated with the opposite of hope. Mm-hmm. You know, the terrible things happening in the world, the presidential election, the way that won't make it into the show, but the way news is defined, mm-hmm. and brought to us. And but I feel like hope is making a comeback. Mm. I feel like what you're talking about, the way you're talking about, a lot of us we're just waking up to that. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of that thing, you know, that you said, we get to know it. Mm-hmm. We get to know it. All evidence to the contrary notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And also to say that's not the only evidence that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of countercultural. I don't know.
I would totally agree. I think it's really difficult given the structure of the media, and you're going to get big kudos here, but what you do with this program is huge. It's not something. If there were more programs like this, then I think people would feel differently about humanity and the direction that things are going. But there's it's probably a genetic thing that we're attracted to the negativity, because back when we were hunters and gatherers, we had to be super, have our ear on the worst possible thing that could happen so you could protect yourself. But now people are attracted to that, and so the media provides it. And I agree. It seems like we are really blessed as a band, because our supporters are seekers, and they come to shows with the masks down and with their hearts on the outside, and since they've gotten close to the albums, they feel comfortable with us as the band members, and so they come and they share their stories openly and quickly. You know, you don't have to have icebreakers and...
Yeah, and that happens in our space too.
I bet.
A different kind of space, but the same...
Yeah.
Everybody okay?
After all the years that you've had this program, I would bet that people are really open with you and sharing that. And the blessing that you probably see too is that you find out how gorgeous people are, if they can talk about it openly and without protection, that just about anybody you can pick out on the street has a gorgeous interior. And we just have to keep working to peel those layers of skin off so that everybody can walk around in their gorgeousness.
Yeah. And that's it. When we open up these spaces, everybody's ready to come rushing in. Not everybody, but almost, the Kardashians aren't with us, but right? But most everybody else is... Mm-hmm. Is open to it. I
think it's in the majority, in the strong majority.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So your new album is called The Seeker, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I do. Hang on, I just want to say, where's my clock? I know I'm supposed to know. Oh, there it is. So we're doing great, right? I can't see Chris. We're doing great. I'm not going to worry about this. We'll just go a few more minutes, and then here's some more music. You are becoming more and more a theologian. I don't know if you know that, but if you don't, I'm telling you.
No.
I mean, it was this song, The Great Unknown, on this album. And when does it come out? This week, right?
Tomorrow.
So none of you have heard it, but I have it in Dropbox. So I have so many, I have favorite lines in this one. I think I transcribed them, so correct me if I don't have every line right. We were made to walk through fire in our dance shoes. God gave us words. They were, I love you, please, and thank you. God gave us thirst, and it's a hunger for the universe. God gave you feet so you could find your own way home. Beautiful.
Thank you. It's called The Seeker because that's what we're here to do. I don't know what we'll find, but it's really not about an individual. It's sort of a story for humanity as a whole, and I feel like that we're on that crust, that era as a people, that we're waking up. We have the potential to wake up to a new age. We have the responsibility to wake up to a new age. There isn't any room for pessimism anymore. time is limited, and so yeah, it's all on the table with this one as far as lyrics go of trying to wake myself and anybody around me up to the fact of, hey, let's go be good people and do a good job.
You know, you that thing you said a minute ago, as I think that's it's a really perceptive way to talk about, we are riveted by the scary news, and we're hardwired to be riveted by the scary news. Mm-hmm. To be a seeker, you have to be choosing to be open to something scary that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's an evolution.
Mm-hmm.
We've done so many shows. We're crazy producing right now. Oh, I have this. We have a brain surgeon on this week, and he talks about the baggage of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
We are actually seeing that we can even like shrink the amygdala, right? Mm-hmm. The fight or flight place mm-hmm. in us. But it just occurs to me that the seeker is actually like that word. Holds. It's so gentle in a way. It's so open, but it's a departure
mm-hmm.
that's very courageous.
Yeah, I think it doesn't classify either. I think you can be a part of any religion or a part of any spiritual pursuit and be a seeker and. There are those, it's kind of a scale, you know. There are those that search a little, or are just hungrier for it. But I see the evolutionary aspect as well. There's the Carl Sagan book where he talks about how if you walked into a room. And then your father walked into the room right behind you, and your grandfather walked into the room right behind you. How long it would take before you hit an ancestor who was down on all fours. And he was discussing it on the level of just evolution in general, but I was thinking about it in the context of, okay, what if that did happen? And ultimately what you end up with is about 250,000 people, you know, your dad, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, all of them in there, a quarter of a million people, and represented in that 3 million years of that would be hunter-gatherers, 10,000 years of that would be farmers, and depending on your family, for my family, it would just be the last two generations that haven't lived off the land. So you've got a quarter of a million people that are, you know, your direct lineage, that if they could all speak the same language, they'd all be able to sit down and talk about living off the land and jabber on and on and on. And it would just be me and my dad sitting there not knowing what to talk about.
Right.
So there's so much change that's happening right now. And we have to keep up with that spiritually. So the requirement to grow spiritually at the pace that we are growing technologically is absolutely necessary. Yeah. Hence good shows like yours.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And hard. I just want to come back to something I had in my notes, and I don't really know where it fits in here in the arc of this conversation, but you know, you said everybody's gorgeous and everybody's also been hurt. And those two things all at once. And you have this song, Blessings, in the Light Chasers album. I mean, the thing is, what you went through with Caden, I guess every parent, every night, my son is here tonight, he's 17, he's like a foot taller than me now. He's a big, strong hockey player. And still, you know, I go into his room in the middle of the night when he's come home, mm-hmm. or first thing in the morning,
mm-hmm.
worried, mm-hmm. is he okay,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that is this this universal experience. And then, the worst happened to you. But you have more children now, and you choose to get through the night to worry every night again, right? And I just, there's something very beautiful in you have this. And the Light Chasers album was after you had kind of come out the other end, mm-hmm. I don't want to say come out the other end, but mm-hmm. walked through the grief, you know. Mm-hmm. Bless the children safe sleeping. Bless the parents heart aching. Bless the wakeless on their journey. Travel safely, travel safely. We're the sleepless, always searching, light chasing, light chasing.
Yeah, that one, it's interesting that you bring that one up in that context, because that line came in the middle of the night. We had Nova was born at that point, and there was so many sleepless nights where you just almost couldn't let yourself fall asleep because that PTSD is there. So we were both, Connie and I were both going through that, and yeah, there was a night that was, it was actually Caden's birthday, which is coincidentally tomorrow, but there was a night when Nova was a newborn, and the next day was Caden's birthday, and we were both just so panicky and couldn't sleep, and in the middle of the night that line was just there, and I give thanks to whatever it is that lays those kinds of things just there, you know. They're gifts, and I think when I was younger and I heard people talk about artists talk about things not coming from themselves, it felt a little pompous, like, oh, God's talking to you, like, wow, you're so important.
Yeah.
You know, but I think I really feel that now, and I don't think it's me individually. I think everybody has that power to sit in silence or be in a moment and to hear things from again, we know of 2% of the universe. There's 98%. Now, well, there's multiverses. This thing is huge. there's so much to be heard, and our bodies can be tools to hear that and put that out there. And all of us have the power to do that. And that line was a gift, wasn't from me.
So, I started asking this question recently when I'm finishing an interview, how someone has, you know, how you have come through all the things that have happened to you through this life you've lived, how you've come to think about what it means to be human, which is obviously an enormous question. And so it's just like, how would you begin to talk about that? I did want to read you back to yourself some beautiful lines that seemed to me to start speaking to that from Through the Ages. I'm done being stupid and worried and dramatic. I lay down my every disguise. So if ever I can't see the magic around me, please take my hands off my eyes. It's a wonderful thing we should all ask the people who love us to do. Please take my hands off my eyes. I don't know where we're from, but we came here to be. We came here to be courageous. What would you add in terms of what you're learning about what it means to be human?
Looking back at the evolutionary discussion that we had earlier, if you continued to trace that lineage all the way back to the creation of life, us going back 3 million years to being on all fours, that's 1% of geologic time. There's so much more that's before that, and there's so much more before the creation of the Earth. And who knows how many cycles the universe has gone through to get to the point that we're at right now. But now we're here, and we are incredibly advanced organisms who are not grasping our potential, and we have to be courageous about laying down our insecurities and our fears, and in order to get to the point that we can really embrace that energy in us. There was a fact that I read. All of physical matter, as we know, is generated or is made of energy, and all of physical matter can be converted back into energy, and it takes a tremendous amount of energy to make the smallest particle of matter. And so in the average human body, there's 7 × 10⁻¹⁸ joules of energy, and that translates into 30 hydrogen bombs. This physical body right here, the energy in it is equivalent to 30 hydrogen bombs I have right now. And that's my only guarantee. I don't know about tomorrow, but I have right now. And I've got this power. What am I going to do with it?
Okay, Craig Minowa. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for Cloud Cult for being here. And this is not over. We're going to hear some more music. So here we go. I'm leaving.
Thank you, Krista.
See you later.
Thank you so much.
Inside our house, was it wishful thinking? Oh God, don't leave us by ourselves, or we're bound to take up drinking. Please send us a miracle so I know that there is meaning. He said, I think that it's a miracle just to be breathing. So live on, baby, live on. Live on, baby, live on. La, la, da, da, da. La, la, da, da, da. Ah, da. Packed up my clothes in a grocery bag. I'm going to find the creator. Clouds or a happy little alien, whoever it is, I need to thank her. Even though I don't know God, I'm happy with the mystery, and I'm certain that I feel it every time that you sing to me songs. Say life is like a song, songs, hummable songs. La, la, da, da, da. Thank you. We'll start a little family and call it our religion. Hunt for ghosts inside our house, cause we'll never give up wishing that we live on. Maybe live on in our song, our humble song. La 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 la. Burning down, you'll be all that's left standing there. You'll become a baby cumulus, fly up to the firmament. No one gets to know the purpose. You need to learn to live without knowing why. All we are saying is step forward, forward. And if you don't believe in miracles, it comes with every single heartbeat, another opportunity to step forward, step forward. Oh no. Oh, 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 step forward, step forward. And everybody here is trying so hard to make things a little better. All we are saying is step forward, step forward. Oh no. Fly up to the firmament. The story of my time machine invention. It's not perfect, cause I'm not that bright. We walk our days with the best of intentions, but when I screw things up, I wanna go back and make them right. Yeah. Yeah. restart the days, and I'll do it so much better. I waste so much time of worry, and I forgot to live my life. Yeah. Yeah. Till I'm back to where it was we were before. I don't need anything except always needing just a little more. I run in circles so I can kick me in the pants. There's a reason God is dog backwards. We must chase the tail. The truth is my invention refuses to go backwards. A tiny glitch I'm sure to figure out, but I can ride on the moment, slowly time traveling forward, so the next destination is always right now. Boy! Boy! I'm not going anywhere till I'm back to where it was we were before. I don't need anything except always needing just a little more. I run in circles so I can kick me in the pants. There's a reason God is dog backwards. We must chase the tail. I finally solved the puzzle of my time machine invention. You see, in the future, this present is the past. So if you give this moment your fullest attention, we'll just keep going forward with no need for going back. Yeah.